This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey, everybody. It's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. We are here with Derek Harms today. We're going to take a few... Over the next couple months, we're going to try to go area by area and talk to some trusted voices in the market. And Derek happens to be the president of the North San Diego Real Estate Investors Club, NSDREI. He is a Compass agent and a real estate investor down in the San Diego market. And welcome to the show, Derek.
Aaron, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, I just wanted to thank you. A year ago, you were part of our attempt to bring in some more expertise into our training portal, and you helped us. You did a great job, helped build out the chapter on adding square footage. So we're going to cover a lot of ground in this in the next 50 minutes because you're all over the place with some cool stuff. So let's first get into the strategy of adding square footage. From where we're at a year ago, I mean, you and Kimberly had really dug into a lot of high-end stuff. And last year, you sort of told us you were taking a little bit of a step back because the market was a little murky. And what's interesting is last year, San Diego attendees at SDCIA, where we launch our annual talk, were so stressed out because the market seemed to really be shifting. What happened last year?
Yeah, last year, we all thought was it. That was the time in the cycle where it was starting, right? There, just about Q3, beginning of Q3 in 2018, we saw interest rates go up, as you know, and that affected home sales and pricing here in San Diego County. And everyone that I know that's in this space had trouble flipping their houses in that particular time. I know for a fact we got nailed on a couple, and I have other friends who got nailed on so many more. Now, that interest rate that went up, I mean, almost a full point, it created this sense of carefulness and caution with buyers. And we just weren't even getting showings. And it was just a completely different market vibe than we were getting for years prior. Now, there had been a couple little dips over, you know, the past 5 years or so where similar things had happened. But this one lasted, you know, through Q4. And then I'd say beginning of 2019, after the holidays, somewhere in January, February, started to pick back up again. But it was a little bit of a scary time, and it makes you really think twice about how the affordability is affecting everything. Because, you know, if rates went up 1 point, they're still historically epically low, but yet it has that much effect on the buying pool here. So that's what happened, and it was real. And if you had too many high price, high leverage projects and you were going on market at that time, you got hurt.
It's like market amnesia with interest rates. Nobody remembers anything, you know, higher than a 10, probably higher than a 6, so, especially new buyers.
Exactly.
Everybody entering the market now, it's been so long, they just think this is normal. So 1%, and you're like, what are you talking about? A 5? That's crazy.
It's so true. And, you know, I try to take that, you know, put that on the forefront of my brain, because look, I'm 34, I'm a millennial as well. So my advanced career and the whole time that I've actually been in this business for the last, you know, 10 years, I've been a part of a low interest rate environment. So granted, you know, we're in this space, we do a lot of research, and I'm friends with you and a lot of other people in town who watch this stuff. And can show the history and the cycles of where this has been. So I always try to remember that. And I let clients and investors and friends know about it as well, because a lot of times you'll get a buyer that you're working with or whatever, and they'll mention, you know, a quarter point on an interest rate or something, and you just have to bring them back down to earth a little bit and remind them that, hey, a 30-year amortizing loan at a 4-ish rate, even if it's a quarter point higher than it was last month, is still ridiculous. And if you can afford that payment for now and moving forward in your life, pull the trigger.
Yeah. I've had this conversation a lot, you know, because we do a lot of market timing stuff and we have turmoil coming up. And, you know, we just tell people it could go up, it could go down, but we don't like some things happening. And really our main goal is talking to people about their portfolios, especially with rentals or the kind of strategies that they're doing. If you're doing, you know, multi-million dollar deals along the coast, you know, that's going to take a year because of how much construction you're doing. And if you get stuck, we have some investors up in the San Jose area that have experienced the same thing. Oddly enough, their peak price, median price, happened in 2018, and they've never made it back. They're off hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you do high end stuff, you know, what's $100,000 on a high end rehab? Right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're in that space in the Bay Area, you're talking, I mean, what, 4 to 10 million? Is that what we're talking? If that's the case, a couple hundred grand isn't as big of a deal as it is for someone here in San Diego, and you're like 1.5 to $2.5 million space, like that's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into first like strategy. So a year ago, you said that you were backing off like some of the really heinous rehabs, the ground up kind of stuff. Have you stuck with that, or have you gone back to doing more of that?
Stuck with that almost exclusively. By stuck with it, I'm saying have shied away from larger projects.
Okay.
And almost exclusively with respect to one project we have right now, which was a fire burned house, and it, you know, it's probably a $1.4 million house, and we picked it up for $570. So there's enough room on this thing for us to go ahead and take the risk. But and a lot of people listening to this are going to say $1.4 million, that's not that high end in California.
In San Diego, that's first time buyer material.
Right. I know. So it's, but in overall numbers wise, and you look how many properties trade above 1.3 million, it's drastically lower than anything in the median price space. And then that just goes without saying, but it's still, your buying pool is limited. Your buyers are more educated and more discerning and pickier. This is probably their second, third, or fourth house. And you have all of the permitting and environmental issues, HOA issues. This particular house is an HOA. So there's all these layers that add to the risk. And you really better have a fat number of profitability for you to go ahead and take the risk. And sometimes you hit a home run. But if you get nailed on one like this, then it's really going to hurt.
Do you see 2020 being very much the same as just caution when it comes to timeline and big projects?
I think so. And I recently talked to one of my friends here in town. They probably do a lot of volume, probably 50, 60 deals a year. And they are really good at the higher end stuff. I mean, we're talking La Jolla projects. They pump out some really, really good products. They have one in escrow on the resale side for over $5 million. And we had a good conversation about this exact strategy, and they're shying away from almost all big projects and basically giving it a three strikes rule where, if you look at a median price house, and if it has three negatives, they won't do the deal. And now in this case, even on these higher end deals, if it has one negative, is there a power line? Is there a busy street? Is it on a slope below grade or something like that? They just walk. And so they're seeing the same things. And it goes back to all the factors that we discussed at your event last year regarding adding square footage, is that there's so much risk and unknowns with the city and with oversight and project management and municipalities. And it just adds all these layers on to where if it's not an absolute home run and there aren't any of the major red flags, then it's just not worth it.
No, I think that is a smart bet in 2020. I've been hearing that across the board. I think that's one of the unique things, the Norris Group. We get to speak to all these clubs throughout the state and getting a sense from, you know, the Inland Empire in Sacramento versus some of the coastal regions. It's interesting how different it can be depending on the market. So one of the things that I'm concerned about right now is in October, we've got these 18 bills that got pushed through. You've got accessory dwelling unit with a timeline that went from 120 days that cities and counties have to push the projects through to now 60. If they're part of an existing primary adding it on, you've got 60 days. If it's a brand new construction, that could take a year, depending on where you're at. It has to go through the standard process. But to me, you know, that legislation didn't come with any extra dollars for the economic development departments and planning departments forced to push those through. Are you worried about that at all for people doing adding square footage and construction?
So am I worried about
timelines?
Oh, absolutely. So that timelines is number one, I think, especially when you're talking about adding new construction and any of this higher end properties, because the timeline is everything. Your carrying cost, what if this is the top of the market cycle and you're 3 months into planning and you're not anywhere close to a building permit and, you know, we have, you know, a market event or something like that. So it's just, it's timing's everything, Aaron, when it comes to this. And, you know, there are projects right now I'm seeing guys shell out $25,000 a month in carrying costs because we're talking about, you know, $4 to $5 million projects in La Jolla where you better know what you're doing and you better have a solid market for the disposition of that asset. Yeah, so that is major, and it goes even deeper. So it's the timing has so many layers. The cities are so understaffed, and a lot of cities here in San Diego, Aaron, are closed on Fridays or closed every other Friday. And it just adds to the length of all your submittals, and municipalities are extremely slow. Water districts now are required, you know, to regulate water usage. And now you're on any new construction in San Diego, ground up, you have to submit a landscaping plan first, and you have to, you know, show your stormwater and water usage before you can even get into a building plan. They want to know what's going to happen with the water usage and the stormwater. And so it just adds all these extra layers. And I got that tip from Leo Clark. I love talking to that guy. But it's, there's just so much. Solar now is a requirement on ground up construction. Mm-hmm. So even for ground up ADUs, that I'm pretty sure that's the case. You may know the answer better than I would on that.
We just,
but I did hear that.
SDCIA, we're working on the February event for ADUs where Senator Witkowski is going to be there and Greg Nicholas from the Housing and Community Development Department. And we got the, oh gosh, I forget the guy's name, but we went to the head guy in the state for energy efficiency. And sure enough, if it's ground up, now a city can grant you a waiver if there's too much shade or there's a few different variables, but I would just go and assume the worst and just be happy if you don't have to have it. But yeah, unfortunately, ADUs are required to have solar. So
yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that. And
wouldn't you rather know though? Like nobody likes surprise solar projects. Those are not cheap.
No, well, exactly. I would much rather just know so I can budget it into our underwriting before we pull the trigger on anything. But going back to the timeline, there's more. I mean, for instance, we have a project right now in Escondido that we submitted a couple months ago, and we've been having to go through a third party plan checker. So because the city is too impacted, and so now we have to play like a telephone game between the third party, which in this case is a company called Eskil, their plan reviewer, and then the city, and then our architect, and then us. And it's like this merry-go-round that undoubtedly adds time to the project. And how much exactly, I don't know, but you know, each day that goes by, you know, it's hundreds of dollars of carrying costs every day. Yep. So it factors in big time.
When we do hard money loans for new construction, it would actually benefit us if we just did loans up front, but we actually require that the land be owned free and clear and the permits and plans done before we fund. And it's actually to benefit of the borrower, because I think a lot of people, especially if they're new, they just don't understand. You could be in planning and permitting for a year before you ever get to break ground. And then you're just paying interest on a loan where you're not even being able to use the money. Not cool. So
not cool.
Especially if you're talking about the million-dollar properties. I mean, yeah, you're talking a huge carrying cost. So, yeah, being very careful.
That's true, man. And I think just absolutely, you got to be careful. And I think just general financial planning, right? It's like if you have this expensive house in a rich neighborhood and the market does turn and you have to hang on to this asset, I mean, you're not even going to be able to come close to treading water. I mean, this is something now that you're going to have to look at and say, okay, well, what do? Do we we stop paying and let this go to foreclosure? Like, what? Like, how are we going to be able to just put money into this every month? Like, what are we going to do? Can we Airbnb it potentially? I mean, if you don't have good answers to all those questions, then there's so much risk involved with that. So if you have a median price home, $650,000 in Claremont here in San Diego, it's a very central neighborhood here in San Diego, you're going to have someone, a family who'd be willing to rent that, and you can at least tread water for a while. You may not cover all your costs, but you'll probably get close, and you'll at least not get smoked. And so that's where these median priced houses right now that are in areas that have the largest buyer pool, and there's so little inventory that right now, I mean, year over year, we're down significantly. And it's with such low interest rates, it's like you have a line out the door still in San Diego if you have that asset. And it's priced appropriately, of course, and it's updated properly, but that it's just so much safer right now, man.
No, I understand. Well, before we move on from the adding square footage, I mean, are you still willing to obviously maybe rearrange the guts? You're just not maybe adding a second floor?
Exactly. And I think the way we look at every deal now is how do we get through the quickest and have a faster velocity of our money. Let's just get this thing in and out. And almost every time that comes back with, well, let's just reconfigure and see what we can do with that. What can we do under existing roof? And, you know, if there's an unpermitted addition or something like that that's already there, I'd much rather deal with that than having to break ground on anything new. So we're doing a lot of reconfiguration. We almost reconfigure every property, whether or not it's a massive 4,000 square foot home or just, you know, a 700 square foot home, which we recently just sold one of those. But it's everything is reconfigured, and it's by far the better play if you can do it. And I think that when underwriting these larger deals, everyone I know that's doing it well is first starting looking through the lens of how do we not go through the city? How do we just get this sold and turn a profit and move on? And going through the full-blown permitting process, plans, review engineering, the whole deal is usually the last option.
What would maybe the top three to avoid in 2020 if you were looking at features to add or things to beware of, just errors on properties that you're seeing people get burned on pretty bad?
So let's see. I've seen people get burned on drainage issues here pretty bad. And so in a couple different ways. So the stormwater requirements in San Diego are very strict, and they may be throughout the state. I'm not 100% sure if that's a state requirement now or just city by city, but the stormwater requirements are very high and very strict. So you have to have a very good plan. Sometimes those are water retention basins. Sometimes it's just a bunch of grading. Sometimes it's a combination of all the above. So it wasn't really this strict until recently. So I know it caught a lot of people off guard who didn't have their nose to the ground every single day. I'm seeing people bite off more than they can chew in the higher end space. And you're seeing a lot of people who are relatively new investors who are buying properties that were maybe just a little too over their head for in terms of scope of work and what's all that's needed. And all these things we're discussing right now, you don't really know about until you get into it, unless you've done a few or you have a mentor who's done them, or, you know, you've just been plugged into a network that has a lot of information that can help you through this. But I'm seeing a lot of that show up. What else am I seeing specifically? Nothing else comes to mind.
That's okay.
That I'm seeing that.
Those are good ones. Where do you hear, and part of this is leaning into, I know you guys just had your annual party in SDREI, and you had a panel of flippers, right?
We did. We had a panel of three extremely high-level house flippers that, you know, they weren't all just house flippers. You know, they were similar but different. So, you know, one is almost a house flipper only. The other is more of a developer slash creative zoning play guy, and he's doing a lot of opportunity zone stuff. And then the other is kind of a myriad of everything, doing house flipping and rentals. They've done apartment buildings, et cetera. So between them all, there's probably a couple thousand deals here in San Diego that have been done. So it was just a very, very high level panel.
Where, for you and the panel, where are deals coming from in the San Diego market right now, as far as sourcing them?
So it was funny when you asked that question, I asked that to everybody, how are you finding your deals? And it almost strictly came down to one term, and that was just relationships. And, I know all three of these guys personally, and I know how a lot of them run their business, and it is pretty much centered among relationships, and whether that's real estate agents, whether that's other investors, whether that's other people have their nose to the ground with the wholesaler, or there's a title company, or whoever it is. Like, sometimes hard money lenders get word of a deal that their borrower can't complete or whatever. And so there's just almost all the deals, the good deals I know are coming through relationships. And a lot of them are doing direct marketing to sellers and homeowners, and we're seeing that work. I'm doing some myself. So I think what we're seeing is there is a pretty good return right now on text message campaigns. And because the cost is so low and the media is instant. So a person is going to check their phone immediately and see a text message, rather than you send out a piece of mail and it gets there 3 days later and it goes and sits on their coffee table and then they call you back, et cetera. So the text message campaigns are interesting. Good old direct mail still works, but at the end of the day, Aaron, good old relationships are the way to go. Looking at our board of properties right now, almost all of them came from relationships. Yeah, a couple from direct to seller, but for the most part, that's where they all come from.
I think there's a fear in the market right now that iBuyers, and maybe not in San Diego, because San Diego, I think is it Zillow? I think Zillow is the only one buying out in your market at the moment, but you've got a lot of real estate brands going to open up California, possibly Keller Williams, the Realogy brands. I don't know if Compass launched since you are a Compass agent, do you know if Compass is launching an iBuyer program?
So the answer is kind of, and it's not really an iBuyer. So to take a step back, I'm in escrow right now to buy a property that the seller had talked to a Zillow buyer as well and let me know that that's what was going on.
Okay.
And sure enough, he didn't like the experience with the Zillow buyer, although I actually offered less than what the Zillow person was able to do. But he didn't give me too many details, but just said that, he appreciated the personal response and the way I was willing to work with this guy on terms. This particular owner needed to stay in the property a few weeks after closing, facilitating his transition to a new property. And, we worked in a couple other favorable terms for him, and that's what got the deal done. And it sounded like the Zillow model was still somewhat rigid. I'm not sure. You probably know better than I do, but it didn't fit into their box properly to make it work. So, but I was able to be flexible, and I'm not exactly sure if that is a requirement on these iBuyers, but that was the vibe I got from this particular seller.
It's so different based on the market. I'm about to have to run for our newsletter this I'm closing out the year, and several including Zillow threw in their names, but man, they got hot and heavy starting in June. Like sort of in California, you've got all four major iBuyers going at full speed, except OfferPad. OfferPad sort of wound down, and then we found out that they decided to partner, I think it was it with Open Door? I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But as they enter in markets, there's just this fear that, I think they're not going to get the easy ones. I have investors that are using iBuyers to time 1031 exchanges better. Because if it's in decent shape and it fits their formula, it's fine. But the formulas are very different depending on the market. In LA, they'll go early 1900s. But here in the Inland Empire, I haven't seen them do that any much in the 1950s. The average is very different. So I'd say be in tune. I've heard the same feedback from many different iBuyers that they sometimes they just don't even call you back. And then the price that you're offered is different than after the inspection happens. So there's, I'm sure they're still trying to figure it out. And there's, it's Wall Street money. So there's definitely a little bit of arrogance that comes with it. So I can't wait to see. We would love to see you out and about all over California. We have a very busy week coming up. January 7th, you'll catch 6 things to succeed in 2020 with Prosperity Through Real Estate in Culver City. January 8th, the next day in Glendale, we'll be doing that same chat with Robert Hall and Associates. And the next day after that, we'll be in Costa Mesa with OC Rhea doing the very same chat. Don't forget to sign up for Turmoil February 1st. It's our very first hybrid event where we're marrying market timing with strategies. We have some very special guests that we'll announce later in the month, but you will be very happy to find out that our subscription is included in the attendance for a single member. So it's a really great way to get a lot of education on the timing and the strategy side for an awesome 2020. The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.